this hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Northwest Safe. There is a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
This is incredibly scary. I don't know if it's necessarily the worst nightmare for a parent, but I'm assuming it's probably up there. A mother of a kindergartner at West Woodland Elementary School in Seattle ended up dealing with a near worst case scenario of a kid who appeared to be completely lost. And the question, of course, is who's responsible for this? And the fact of the matter is probably everyone at this point. Ingrid Johnson dropped her son off at school. Everything went well. He went into the class. I'm assuming he had fun, or at least is pretending to. At kindergarten, you're not really doing anything. That's not so fun. But then it started to not go according to the plan. So she comes after school to watch him get on the bus on his way to a Boys and Girls Club after school program.
He was ushered out by a woman dragging six children with a big sign that said a bus on it. I didn't think anything of it.
She didn't think anything of it. This is what's supposed to happen. I don't know specifically why she chose not to pick up her kid and drive the kid to the after school program herself. Maybe she was just doing this to make sure that the process is followed, that the school is supposed to do this the right way. Unfortunately, the kid didn't actually end up at that Boys and Girls Club. The kid's name is Rex. Rex had been dropped off at his assigned bus stop alone a few blocks away from Aurora Avenue near Green Lake. This is a really good spot, by the way, if you want to purchase drugs or if you want to purchase some time with a prostitute. That's the kind of point in the city where he was. Very nearby. Now, Ingrid said that the kid's supposed to be picked up from that bus stop, but not actually dropped off at that bus stop. She said his dad lives nearby, so the five-year-old ended up crossing a side street and walking until he found his dad's home.
You know, they talk about mom crying on the first day, but this wasn't the type of crying I wanted. It was absolutely horrifying. I don't wish this on anyone, ever. This is not a screw-up. This was a life-endangering situation. It was an abandonment. That's not acceptable.
Okay, but it was a screw-up. I mean, it was a screw-up, and it was dangerous. You'd say that. It was a screw-up. So Johnson said her sister found Rex outside of his dad's home alone nearly an hour later while they were searching the neighborhood to find out where this kid went. A spokesperson for Seattle Public Schools was all like, my bad. Sorry.
I mean,
our bad.
Yeah, my bad.
We own it. I mean, they gave a big, long statement, but we're sorry for the mix-up. The principal apparently apologized directly to the family. So there's a lot to sort of unravel here, because I've got a lot of questions. And the first one I have is coming from a place where I'm not a parent. I don't like children. I don't plan on having any young kids. If I adopt, they're going to have to be lawyers and 27 years old or doctors and 20. Like, I'll adopt that person. Do you let your kid go on a bus alone as a kindergartner? I know I'm presuming that the parent's with the kid at the bus stop waiting for the bus to be picked up. Do they not? Is that normal?
Yeah.
That's a question I have. And people, because you're not, what are you going to say?
No,
you're not a parent. You have no clue.
I'm even further away than anybody.
Okay, I'm not that old. 1-800-465-8770. Send me a text on that, because that's the one thing that kind of throws me. The second thing is, again, you're going to the school to watch the kid get on the bus. You see a woman dragging or leading six kids onto a bus. Do you not ask to make sure that that's the right bus? If you're not clear that it's the right bus, I'm assuming, again, you're out of school, there's multiple buses. Are you not having the conversation of, okay, I just want to make sure, because you're already there checking up on your kid, and kudos to her for checking up on the kid. You're not having that conversation just to say, just so we're all clear, because I'm already here, I'm already doing the footwork. Kid's supposed to get off at this after-school program. And then, hey, bus driver, hey, dope, are you letting a kindergartner off your bus without a clear adult that's present there to pick them up? Is that cannot be normal, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure. And I think the mom was right there. Could have followed the school bus to wherever it was going because they were going to the same destination.
To be fair, maybe there was a bus stop beforehand for other kids to get off and meet their parents. The parent just went up to the Boys and Girls Club program. This is just super weird to me. I take most of my issues specifically with the bus driver. It does not feel like it's an appropriate thing to do as a bus driver, letting a five-year-old kid off that bus if there is not an adult there waiting for them. That just doesn't seem right to me. Now, I'm crazy. I'm just a talk show host. I'm not a bus driver. And maybe the whole idea is to get rid of the kid as quickly as humanly possible. The second then that kid steps off that bus, no longer your responsibility. Seems a little weird if that's the case. 1-800-465-8770. If you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline, I appreciate the people reaching out saying they are, in fact, lawyers who would love to be adopted by me. But it turns out that they're saying they're still oppressed by the loans that they took out. That's, you're not acceptable to me. The only people who I will adopt is if you're self-sufficient and I can take money from you. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? National.
So obviously today is September 11th, and there are a lot of people who knew what they were doing at the moment the towers were hit and the towers went down, that the Pentagon was hit, that United Flight 93 went down. Lots of us have those memories, but for most of us, if not every single person listening to me right now, we don't have a direct connection to what happened. We experienced it as Americans, but we didn't experience it as New Yorkers, and we didn't experience it as the family members of victims, unlike a lot of people, nearly 3,000 people. Nicholas Harris Jr. is one of those people who lost his mother on 9/11. And today, during ceremonies, he used his speech at the memorial event in New York City to call out that vicious anti-Semite Ilhan Omar over comments that she made just a few weeks ago that went like this.
CARE was founded after 9/11. Because they recognized that some people did something and that all of us were starting to lose access to our civil liberties.
Some people did something. And she wants to pretend that she lost access to her civil liberties. But some people did something. Which I suppose is technically true. Some people did do something. But kind of sounds like you're minimizing the something that they did. Because the something that they did ended up costing a lot of people their lives. It completely changed families. It changed cities. It changed states. It changed our entire country. It changed this entire globe. So a little bit more than some people did something, and so Nicholas decided to call that nonsense out.
Some people did something, said a freshman congresswoman from Minnesota, to support and justify the creation of CARE. Today I am here to respond to you exactly who did what to whom. Madam, objectively speaking, we know who and what was done. There is no uncertainty about that. Why your confusion? On that day, 19 Islamic terrorists, members of Al-Qaeda, killed over 3,000 people and caused billions of dollars of economic damage. Is that clear? But as to whom? I was attacked. Your relatives and friends were attacked. Our constitutional freedoms were attacked. And our nation's founding on Judeo-Christian principles were attacked. That's what some people did. Got that now? We are here today, Congresswoman, to tell you and the squad just who did what to whom. Show respect in honoring them, please. American patriotism and your position demand it. For God and country, amen.
Good for him. Good for him for standing up for what's right here. Now, I, of course, have a lot to say on Ilhan Omar and her despicable rhetoric. But you know what? Don't need to say anything. Nicholas just said it all. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. Later on in the show, at about 5:45, we're going to have a tribute to Flight 93. It's a tribute that we air each and every year on 9/11 when I'm able to, and it is not told through me. I say absolutely nothing. You will not hear my voice for 9 minutes during that tribute. All you will hear are news actualities from speeches, from people on the ground, from some of the victims themselves, and it is incredibly jarring. I went back and I listened to it again today because I hadn't listened to it since last year, and to me at least, it doesn't change didn't change how I reacted. It was still very difficult to listen to. So I'm giving you your warning right now. But if you do want to hear that and this tribute, you can tune in at 5:45 later on this afternoon. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending on the campaign trail?
That we have to actually celebrate the fact that a Democrat ended up condemning what is a deeply barbaric practice tells you exactly how far to the fringes the Democratic nominees have gone. Because Tulsi Gabbard, the congresswoman, a very, very, very long shot of a viable candidate. She is not, of course, going to become the nominee from the Democratic Party, but she came out against third trimester abortions. She is the only nominee for president on the Democratic side to do that. Let that sink in, because as much as I clearly am comfortable claiming that Joe Biden is the moderate of the bunch, and he clearly is the moderate in the context of who's running, even he hasn't come out against third trimester abortion officially, according to nonprofit groups that track all of this. Now, Tulsi Gabbard was on with Dave Rubin on his weekly show. He's a friend of this show. She sends a little bit of a mixed message here, but she does clarify it. Here she is.
Government really shouldn't be in that place of dictating to a woman the choice that she should make. I think that there should be some restrictions, though. For me personally, I would not make that choice for myself. But I don't believe that I should be telling anybody else the kinds of decisions that they should make for themselves or for their family. And therefore, a woman should have the right to choose. And I will stand up and fight to protect her right to do so.
Do you have a cutoff point for that?
I think the third trimester, unless a woman's life or severe health consequences is at risk, then there shouldn't be an abortion in the third trimester.
So there she qualifies her position, because it almost sounded like she was just speaking personally, but I think towards the end it makes it a little bit more clear that she's speaking out in favor of laws that would prevent third trimester abortions. This is not a very hard line that she's taking, but she's taking a position. A position that isn't your body, your choice. You get to do whatever it is you want, and by the way, you're going to have to pay for it as well. Oh, no, sorry, mistake. You listening is going to, you're going to have to actually pay for it. On the right, I'm seeing a lot of people online, myself included, by the way, celebrating this position from Tulsi Gabbard. And I think that's rather telling, that we are simply saying this is a good thing, that someone is coming out and taking a very mainstream position is very, very telling. And it shows you why the Pew Research Center poll shows an unfavorability rating now higher than favorability for the Democrats. When you put them on stage and you have them talk about their crazy beliefs, people view them negatively. Right now, you've got a whole bunch of fringe Democrats who hold a position in support of third trimester abortion, despite the fact that Democrats overall are against it, but the candidates are not. The candidates are appealing to the fringes. This is a fringe position. This is not simply a reasonable debate, which I think people can have on the topic of abortion, right? I happen to be pro-life because I err on the side of life. I have no idea when life begins. No clue whatsoever. Science, I'm not going to pretend, categorically says life begins at conception. I don't know if that's true. I'm going to err on that side, though. Because I'd rather us not kill life, but call me crazy. But I understand other people could take the exact same position that I am, which is, I don't know when life begins, so I'm going to err on the side of it not being life at conception. Okay, I think that that is a reasonable position that I just happen to disagree with. I'll have that debate. Third trimester? When the baby is viable outside of the womb, that is simply barbaric. And there's no other way to talk about it. The folks on that stage, every single debate, one coming up tomorrow, they don't view it as barbaric. And if they do, they don't think that any of us should have any say in coming up with laws to protect that child that's viable at the time that some of these folks seem to be okay with an abortion taking place. These are people who support repealing the Hyde Amendment. What is the Hyde Amendment? That means you cannot give federal dollars to abortion services. It's put in place because we have a general understanding in this country that no, not everyone is in agreement on this, that there's a moral issue here, that maybe we shouldn't force, I don't know, hardcore Christians who believe that this is murder to pay for a, ultimately, at least in the vast majority of cases, a voluntary decision that you're making. Even if it might be right for that person, it's still voluntary in like 99% of the cases. They're crazy. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
We talked a little bit about this earlier in the week, but the blog is up right now, and I've been able to do some more digging into a Washington State freshman senator. Her name is Mona Dosh. She is the Democrat representing the 47th district. That is Auburn and Kent. And she claimed at one point in front of a group of folks at a Kent Chamber of Commerce luncheon that she was the victim. She was the victim of bigotry. And it was bigotry that would unleash in front of her when she was in the caucus meetings, these closed door meetings with other Democrats.
And I will tell you what happens when the caucus door closes. And if that doesn't mean anything to you, it means when the Democrats get together and the Republicans get together to talk about bills, they go into what's called caucus, and then they close the door. And after they close that door, that's when it gets real. That's when my 28 colleagues got real.
It's almost like she's doing a preview for the upcoming Real World, season 47.
And that's when I heard hate. That's when I heard misogyny and racism and sexism from people you would not expect.
Whoa, that's serious. Now, when that was first reported by the Kent Reporter, Mona Dosh claimed that the report was a, quote, mischaracterization of my remarks. Then video emerged. We just played it. We didn't know. No one out there miscategorized it. It was very, very, very clear what she did. But of course, she has no shame. She ended up throwing that reporter under the bus. So once the Senate heard about this, the Secretary of the Senate was like, okay, we need to investigate this. Doss didn't ask for an investigation. Mona Doss never asked for an investigation. Why would she? Her allegations had absolutely no merit. Behind the scenes, I was talking to insiders who said, no, 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 they're not going to let her get a pass for this. They're going to look into this and they're going to tell you that none of this actually happened. And guess what happened? The investigation found absolutely no evidence that the comments were made by her colleagues. Now, what happened around this time that she was pushing this story? Turns out she was starting a consultancy firm called Moxie, which she said on her Facebook page, and I went to a personal page to see this, said that she was inspired to start this business by her quote-unquote traumatic experience in both running for office, but also serving as an elected official, especially as a woman of color, again, according to her. Now, in one of the posts, she announced that she was actually hiring people for this new consulting firm. And she called out people who were, quote, interested in working for a company whose mission is to change the system, a company who's looking to take on racism, sexism, oppression, white privilege, and misogyny through political engagement. Her whole service is to specifically address the hurdles that candidates of color will face as they're running for office, and then, of course, support them when they happen to be in power. Wouldn't she have an even better pitch if she had a personal story to sell her services to these candidates? She could say, you know what? I know what you're going to fight because I fought against it. I experienced it. She was looking for some progressive street cred. And this is the kind of stuff you can't actually buy. You have to live it. The unseen bigotry behind the scenes, behind closed doors, even in the Democratic Party. She knows how to win. She knows how to persist because she's experienced it. Except she didn't actually experience it. She's quoted, by the way, at the time, my new business is to promote people like me, which is rather alarming, at least to me. People like you. You mean politicians who make up baseless claims of bigotry for, oh, I don't know, to further one's own career? Someone who's going to lie to the media about comments that she clearly made and then move on kind of as if you did nothing wrong. Well, how about this? One of her clients, Owale Farah, is running for Kent City Council. That's someone that I wouldn't vote for. Because if you're telling me You're recruiting people and promoting people like you? I don't want Awali Farah then. That means that that person has questionable judgment. You know who doesn't? Zandria Michaud, who we're big fans of on this show. She's running for that same exact seat on the Kent City Council. Go ahead and support Zandria and make sure that people in Kent know about Zandria's campaign. Because I don't want other people like Mona Doss. By the way, she's also backing Burien City Council candidate Sophia Aragon. Probably not a good pick. Now, to be fair, I haven't spoken to either of them. I would love for them to come on the show. I think we've reached out to Awali Farah in the past. We never heard back. Maybe Mona Doss doesn't want Awali Farah talking to us. 1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to the story so you can help me shine a giant spotlight on this fraud. Text R-A-N-T-Z to 1-800-465-8770. Back to the Jason Rancho. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for being a subscriber to the podcast. If you're not, please make sure you text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770. Taxis, about 2 decades too late. They're finally trying to get their acts together. They, of course, were decimated by Uber and Lyft and the rideshare companies. They tried instead to compete by evolving as a company, offering better services. They decided to spend a lot of money defeating Uber. They thought that that would be easier. Now, of course, that did not work. And right now, the taxi cabs are hanging on by a thread because of the taxi cab unions that purchase loyalty from politicians in positions of power. And so the politicians have been able so far to tax the hell out of Uber and Lyft. They're trying to go even further than that. Uber's fighting back. But now in 2019, finally, the taxi cabs are all like, I guess we ought to do something a little bit different because our policy of trying to compete with Uber by not offering better services, not working. Because no one likes taking cabs. Number one, they're more expensive than Ubers and Lyft. But number two, the drivers are generally rude. I've gotten kicked out of 2 or 3 cabs very quickly after them picking me up because I didn't have cash. I was going to pay with a credit card. Now, they didn't like anyone paying with a credit card because then they'd have to actually put in the details for tax purposes. But now all of this is going to change. Taxis will now have new smart readers that use GPS to dispatch, track, and toll rides. But wait, there's more. That, according to Matthew Eng, Seattle Department of Finance.
All of the yellow cabs are also having new credit card readers installed,
yay,
which we know has been a point of contention in the past if drivers have refused to accept a credit card, even though they had the means to take one.
Yeah, and by the way, they're not allowed to kick you out if you want to pay with a credit card, and yet the city knows about it but did pretty much absolutely nothing. That Seattle Department of Finance says that the GPS unit's also going to be used in a different way. They told our sister station, Cairo Radio, that it's also going to help make the ride safer, not just for the riders, but also for the drivers, because it can track the cab's exact location.
If there happened to be a crime that was committed, that we could use data captured by the smart taxi meter to help understand what transpired during the trip.
We'll see if the ACLU of Washington is concerned with this. Generally, they get concerned by this sort of stuff, but it kind of seems like they're in bed with the taxi cab industry folks as well, because they're all woke progressive. Something tells me they might not speak out all that harshly. The GPS, I'm told, can also be used for surge pricing on taxis, which is probably what it will end up being used for. They're not currently allowed to do that. I'm assuming they're going to get the permission. That, of course, would be a mistake, because the only reason why someone might want to take a taxi cab in this region is during times where Uber rides or Lyft rides are going through surge pricing because there's not enough competition out there. There's not enough supply to meet the demand. So they jack the rates up really, really high. The taxi cab union, the taxi cab industry is not able to do that. That's the only time you would be able to take a taxi. But here's something that's related to this that is freaking me out. You've got now taxi cab drivers, and to be fair, also the rideshare drivers, they're supposed to be trained now to spot potential human trafficking victims across King County. The council just passed the motion today requiring King County develop a new curriculum for all of these drivers. Council member Gene Cole Wells was the one pushing the measure.
The more training that we can provide to all individuals working in certain roles that have contact with the public and may be able to understand that some trafficking is possibly going on.
The taxi cab drivers provide awful customer service already. Okay? They're not going to do this. I don't need to put this on the shoulders of the taxi cab drivers, okay? They're not going to be able to do it. They get mad when you pay with a credit card. They get furious. The new upgrades now, the updates to what it is they do, will make it so they don't even have to look at you, probably, okay? They want as little interaction with you as humanly possible. Now we're going to have them look all of us up and down to make sure that we're not human trafficking. This is not good. There are going to be unintended consequences, which is them saying many times, oh, this is a clear example of human trafficking, when it's not. It's like, this is my dad. Can you just stop giving me a hard time? I promise you that I'm not being kidnapped. There was a story last year, 6 months ago, maybe a little bit more than that, maybe a little bit less. Cindy McCain, who I believe, this is, by the way, the former wife of John McCain. Cindy McCain, I believe, runs an organization that highlights human trafficking cases. She made news because she apparently at a Phoenix airport was able to spot human trafficking that was going on. And it turns out that it was wrong. She was 100% incorrect. That's someone who I believe is directly connected to organizations that spend all of their time focused only on this issue. And then finally, since it is related, Wallet Hub, which is a site that puts out daily best of lists to get you to give them more clicks. They just named Seattle as the number one city in the entire country with the best public transportation, which is a position that is laughable and almost offensive. I'm actually scared about the implications of this. They say data sets include share of commuters who use public transit, average age of the fleet, number of injuries, peak hours spent in congestion. And they say they're number one. Boston, San Francisco, D.C., and Madison, Wisconsin round up the top five. If you're wondering about Portland, because Portland's the absolute worst and we hate Oregon, they came in at number 10. Now, either the person who came up with this list has no connection whatsoever with Seattle, or literally every other transit system is just crap. It's just trash. Our transit system is awful. I'm not saying it's the worst. I'm saying it's awful. And if we are the best, that's scary. I've been to DC. I've taken their metro system. I actually had a really good time there. But to be fair, I only visited when taking it. I don't live there. I live in Seattle. I take the bus here. And I can tell you categorically, it's always late. Always late. Without fail, it is always late. It's routinely smelly. It's frequently filled with homeless people who are passed out while smoking a joint. And if any of you follow me on Instagram, which you should, you would have seen 2 weekends ago me taking lots of video of that guy who decided on the bus in the back while already seemingly passed out. He looks away and it's like he's alert all of a sudden. Then slowly he reaches for a joint. I think, what do they call the little one? Roaches? Is that what the kids still say?
Yeah, I think the kids say that.
That's what the kids say. So he took it out. And again, all of this was happening almost in slow motion. That's it, because I'm assuming he was already high. So he puts it up to, he takes out a lighter, takes him several times to set the thing up. He takes a couple puffs, smoke is going everywhere. He then passes out again with the joint still lit.
Wow.
And it was just happy. Everyone kind of looked at him and was like, no one said anything. I don't know what you're supposed to do. No one likes to be put in that position. And we know the bus driver doesn't like to do anything, although we're supposed to tell the bus driver. But it was just like, this is what I experience on buses. And if you're lucky, you can be like my listener a few weeks ago who found a used needle at the bus. It's a bad situation, okay? Again, not saying it's the worst. I'm saying it's not the best. Now, usually we all know what these stupid websites are and these lists are. It's just a way to manufacture some excitement and clicks for a website. There's no thought that goes into it, although they give you the appearance of thought. And we usually just throw it away. It's not that big of a deal. But when you're number one or the last one on a list, then it starts to become a little bit more ludicrous. And it's not just me who holds this position. There's someone in the building who works at MyNorthwest.com, which is our sister website, or I guess our parent website. He's a huge fan of transit. He takes it everywhere. That he doesn't own a car. Even he was all like, yeah, no, 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 we're sorry, we're not the best.
I want you two to have a segment weekly that's what I saw on transit this week, and you guys can just complain about it.
I do that almost daily.
I know
on
you do.
My Facebook page, our Twitter feed, but mostly my Instagram because it's a lot of fun visuals. So actually, if you haven't done so yet, why don't you follow me on Instagram? Just fire up your Instagram app, add the screen name Jason Rantz. It's one word, JasonRantz, and you can see some of the outrageous videos and photos that I post with abandon. Do it all the time. Jason Rantz on Instagram. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. There's kind of a tricky situation at an elementary school in Portland, Oregon. And I'm only talking about it because it's one of those issues that could happen here in Washington State. Otherwise, I don't care what happens about Portland. You know what's the worst, Producer Peyton?
What's the worst?
Portland!
I should have guessed that.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of...
It's on book number 4 in here.
Yeah, well, it's volume number 4. That's book number 12.
Oh.
God. You have so much to learn.
I'm in a library.
I know. You're supposed to read, not just look at all the books there. It's filled with my knowledge.
I'm busy pushing buttons.
Okay. Well, don't push a button for the next 5 minutes because I got to talk about what's going on there because parents are complaining that they weren't told about a teacher there that is apparently being investigated for abuse. KATU Television says that the teacher was put on leave at a different school last year after facing allegations of abuse. She's not been charged with a crime. There's no word yet on whether the investigation into the case has actually reached a conclusion at this point.
My son's friend had a ball and the teacher kicked the ball away from him and kicked him on his feet and grabbed him from here really hard. It doesn't matter what color you are, she treats all the kids bad.
So that is a parent's perspective. I think we should trust the kids, but also know that when we're talking about kids, maybe they're speaking a little bit hyperbolically, maybe they're exaggerating just a little bit. That's why you have these investigations, and they're incredibly important. Now, the teacher in this case, her name is Sylvia Chavarin, but she actually goes by a different name. At the school, she goes by the name Sylvia Lewis. So a mom talking with KTU Television was all like, this is kind of weird and freaking us out.
We can't trust when the district isn't forthcoming with information. And it did mention that she had been in a Spanish immersion program prior to teaching at Roseway Heights. Okay. But it didn't say anything more than that. When she came to the school, she introduced herself as Sylvia Chavarin. When we can find out more information by Googling in 30 seconds or looking on Facebook social media from previous schools, it's a little disheartening. Our concern is really, why weren't we told that there was something that could raise our suspicions about this teacher?
And I think that's a fair question, but I don't know what the answer is. Because I want parents certainly to be as involved as they can be in a healthy way with their kids' schooling, right? You want the parents to generally understand what's going on. But at the same time, if she hasn't been charged and there's an investigation and the school legitimately doesn't think that the teacher's a danger, are you not making it impossible for that teacher to do their job by talking about the investigation? It's tricky. I fully acknowledge that I would want to know if I had a kid, although I don't really like kids, so I wouldn't be that active of a father. But in the world that I cared about kids and I had one, I was in school, like I would want them to be forthcoming and just be like, just FYI, here are some allegations made against the teacher. We are investigating. We don't believe that there's any imminent threat to any kids. We don't think the allegations rise to that level, but we do want to take it seriously, but we also want to be fair to her. We want you to know about this because we know you care about your kid, and just I hope you know that we will be monitoring the situation as well just to make sure everything's on the up and up because we all... At the end of this investigation, they can say, you know what, the kid made it completely up. They just lied. Lying liar who lies. Then mistreating this teacher would seem a little bit unfair. But again, as a parent, I would want more information. So I'm wondering if they could have handled this in a little bit better of a way. Because according to the story, no one at the school is talking, giving any details. A lot of that has to do with the fact that it's a personnel issue. So you can't really give all that stuff out. At the same time, in South Carolina, there is kind of a similar instance there of withholding information. This time, though, it's about a student. 16-year-old student at Cardinal Newman School made videos of himself firing a gun and using racial slurs. It was posted on some social media channel, and officials, when they learned about it at the school, decided to report it to the cops, but they didn't report it to the parents. Then the news finds out about what this kid had done, presumably because some kids or parents started to talk about it. They end up covering the story. Parents who weren't aware of what was going on got mad at the school, livid that they weren't told. How much do you want to know, though? How much should we be telling you? Because if we're going to get into the habit of repeating absolutely everything that happens, even when it's been addressed by cops, you're going to create a situation in which you're going to be scared to send your kid to school. I have to assume that things like this happen with some regularity. Some kid doing something stupid without any nefarious intent. Maybe the kid's just a bad kid but doesn't actually pose a threat. If the cops are aware of it and the cops are legitimately handling it, I don't know necessarily if I want to be aware as a parent. But you guys tell me. You guys are the parents. Text us on the NumBetter Tax Resolution Hotline, 1-800-465-8770. For example, we got a text from the 360 saying, look, innocent until proven guilty. I get it, but maybe because your kids are involved, it's a little bit different. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show.